Hundreds of people die in riots in Nigeria, plus the Congo has incredible mineral wealth. Some of it is misused by militias that have helped trigger violence. Should consumers ask more questions about whether the goods they buy have been part of recent conflicts? We've got that and more on today's Africa Update with Roxanne Lawson. She's Director of Africa Policy for TransAfrica Forum. Hi, Roxanne.
Hello.
So hundreds of Nigerians were killed recently because of clashes between Christians and Muslims. The spark was a disputed election between the mostly Christian-backed People's Democratic Party, who won, and the mainly Muslim-supported opposition All Nigeria People's Party, who says the election was rigged. What's the latest on this?
So the latest on this is that, in fact, over 400 people are dead, 7,000 displaced in Jos and Plateau State in Nigeria. And the conflict, though, is under control. The Nigerian government has responded and kept it from spreading to other parts of Nigeria.
When you have people burning homes and churches and mosques, it's pretty easy to look at this as a religious conflict, particularly when you have Nigeria having one-fifth of the continent's people, and people split between Islam and Christianity. But is religion the only reason for this conflict?
Definitely not. I mean, religion is part of what's underpinning the conflict. There are also schisms around people who are pastoralists versus those who are farmers, around ethnic tensions that have existed long term in Nigeria. But I think at the root of all of this is actually just a powerful disenfranchisement, that the majority of people that we see that are taking up arms in Nigeria, that are responding to...
Hi, Roxanne, are you with us? We're just checking a technical issue. I believe that we have lost Roxanne Lawson. We are going to try to get her back on the line. But I want to talk a little bit while we're waiting for Roxanne to come with us about some new moves to highlight ongoing battles to control pricey minerals in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The Democratic Republic of Congo is struggling to recover from a five-year civil war that ended in 2003. An estimated 3 million people died in that conflict, mostly from starvation and disease. Now, a recent conflict in the eastern part of the country has displaced another 250,000 civilians. The country has huge reserves of gold, cobalt, and other minerals that are used to make electronics and cell phones and computers. And now there's been something called the Kimberley Accord, which has dealt with conflict diamonds. But now there's a question of whether or not there should be a similar accord that deals with these minerals like gold and some of the minerals that are in cell phones. We're going to have to bring you a special report because we cannot return to our Africa update. Thank you very much.
Different from, you know, work that's age inappropriate for young people, I actually have acquired because they are books that I would want and do want the children and the young people, age appropriate, mind you, to read, because they are important cautionary tales and important reference point for having discussions about what is going on in this society today.
How much do we know about the sales of these books? How much would a top street lit book sell in terms of numbers of copies sold? Uh-huh. How much of the black book market does this represent? Do we know anything about that?
Yeah, we do, because as being an acquiring editor, Shannon Holmes, for example, I published two of his novels, Bad Girls, for example, when I last checked, 111,000 copies. We published Sister Soldier's Coldest Winter Ever, which is now sold over 1 million copies in all of the editions, various editions. You know, and publishers don't have total control over what retailers do. And we're negotiating with them and nagging them all the time about balancing the placement of work. You know, we want the literary work up front as we want other kinds of books. The other thing is it just so happens publishers, we actually don't spend more money in promoting urban lit and street lit because we don't have to. The word of mouth is so tremendous, just like in the music industry. You know, you could put out an underground record and it could make money. The same thing happens for us.
So let me ask you this, Relentless. Malaika just mentioned that some of the street lit books have redemptive themes, or, you know, people who were going through things and who emerged triumphant on the other end. Do you see yourself ever in your books writing about redemption in a way that actually could be teaching life's lessons? Or is that just not the point of what you do?
No, but I actually do that. I actually do teach underneath the entertainment. I pride myself with broadening a person's awareness, you know, whether it's street politics or high-level politics. If people stretch their imaginations past the book covers, because, you know, we all know a shallow person judges a book by its cover, we will be able to see the jewels within the books and not pigeonhole everyone. And if I wasn't a good writer, people wouldn't be flocking to me. I wouldn't get the front page of the art section of the New York Times. On the other hand, other authors that might feel slighted by such thing, you know, might have a problem with it. And I think that might be where Nick felt he was being smacked.
Nick?
So you think you're on the front page of the art section because of the quality of your writing?
Oh, absolutely. Because without the quality of my writing, I wouldn't have sold so many books.
So the fact that you're selling books on the prison bus, you don't think that's what the Times felt was newsworthy about this, and that was converted into a book deal?
No, that
you
just
think
happened
it's the
to be
You think it's the quality of your writing?
That was coincidental that the writer ran into me while I was selling books on the prison bus. Prison bus books, the books that we sell on the prison bus, Nick, is not our biggest audience. Our biggest audience is in the streets, is in the beauty salons, is on the web. You know, that's where my audience is. I mean, I also sell books to the prisons and on the prison buses. But
well, let me just jump in and ask Nick, you know, Elin Harris, who started out selling in beauty parlors door to door out of the trunk of his car. There's a long history of black folks kind of bootstrapping it to get literature out or to get books out. Now, would you consider doing street marketing? Have you done street marketing for your books? Regardless of the kind of literature you do, there's a whole market of people who just go to the corner booksellers. Could literature, black literary fiction, become more aggressive in competing street to street?
Well, I think that all of literature needs to be more aggressive and wiser about how we market our books and finding our audience. I mean, this is about finding your audience. I'm not sure if the audience for many of my books would be on a prison bus, but, you know, they're somewhere in the community, and it's part of my job and my publisher's job to find them. But the answer to that question lies in what our editor said about not having to spend as much money on the marketing of these books because they're doing the marketing, the street marketing themselves. I think that lies at the heart of why so many mainstream publishers are now so eager to acquire this stuff. If you have some guy who you know is going to be out there hustling, selling it out of the back of his car, going into up and down the street into barbershops, beauty parlors, then sure, you're going to be a lot more eager to publish him, regardless of the quality of the writing, than somebody maybe who's more literary or more commercial. I can understand why they would be more attracted to the guy who's going to work harder.
Now, I'm afraid that we're just about out of time, but I'm going to throw one last question to Malaika. Given what you just heard, the interchange between Relentless and Nick, what is the future of street lit as a part of African American literature?
I never set aside the quality of the writing and the storytelling for marketing considerations. One of the most effective means for making a book popular is for it to get into the word of mouth flow. All authors have to take responsibility for promoting their own work along with and in partnership with their publisher.
Well, that's going to have to be the last word. We've been talking street lit with Malaika Adero, senior editor for Atria Books at Simon & Schuster, Relentless Aaron, who was born DeWitt Gilmore, author of the upcoming Extramarital Affairs, and Nick Childs, co-author with his wife of novels including A Love Story. Thank you all.
Thank you.